This is Geek Radio Daily with a moment from RavenCon 13.5 2018. There were not enough hecklers during this riffing panel. What was wrong with them? If there was any panel to do it in, it would have been this one. But you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Wise words.
Actually, that small amount of jackassery gave it enough time.
Ah, yeah. The blinker hadn't blocked.
So this is riffing, and there was no real description of what exactly we're talking about here, so we're just going to talk about riffing in general. Hmm. So let's go down the table and introduce ourselves, starting with...
Hi, I'm podcasting's Rich Siegfried, also known as Richie Munster, depending on how adult the conversation's gotten to be. My experience in riffing, I came across MST3K once it was on Comedy Central, after it had already been around for a while and whatnot. Then a few years later, because I was always making stupid jokes and commentary on any crap movie I watched anyway, for one of the shows that I used to do, Cinema Freaks, we used to riff movies. A friend of mine did a show, Hey, You Want to Watch a Movie, which was all about riffing movies, and I appeared on that a few times. I used to run a live twice a month Riff Fest called Cineplex. So we had two of them. We had Cineplex 13, which focused on horror movies, and the other one was Cineplex UHF, which was just cheesy 80s sci-fi movies. And that ran for a couple years. And it was kind of a free-for-all MST3K where everybody could make jokes about it. And I have riffed movies at several cons at this point in time. It's just such a fun thing to do when you take something that was either made intentionally funny or not, and then you make it even better just by a little bit of audience participation.
Hi, I'm Monica, and I'm a smartass. I'm with Tangent Artists. We do comics and funny books like the Handbook for Saucy Bards and the Cleric's Guide to Smiting and the Ranger's Book, How Not to Die in the Woods Like an Idiot. Let's see.
Where Witch Kids had that?
Wouldn't have been a movie.
Where's the map? Where's the map?
Oh, here it is, because I wasn't dumb enough to throw it in the river.
Yeah,
the credits.
River, yeah. End movie. Well, let's see. Yeah, I got into MST3K when I moved back to America from England. That was just something. That was one of the few shows that all of me and my brothers would agree on, so that was kind of big. So that just sort of formed my base in riffing. I started to riff myself when my brothers were getting into horror movies, and I was terrified of horror movies at the time, so I would tell jokes throughout the movie so I wouldn't be scared. And it turned into a habit. I got into improv theater. I became the resident riffer in the anime club for any time somebody brought a really crappy series over. It was me and my friend Spencer just sitting up front making jokes the whole time. And nobody banned us. It was great. I finally got a chance to do some riffing for One Wall Cinema through Riff Tracks Media. That's the iRiff store where different people can make their own riffs. And I was the main writer for the, vocal performer. I didn't have a microphone at the time. I was the main writer for the G.I. Joe animated movie iRiff, which you can still purchase online. And the one for the Shadow with Alec Baldwin. So.
Hi, I'm Carol Coles. I am the Cinemistress at GeekRadioDaily.com.
Ding.
Thank you. and I'm Carol the Cat on Guardians of the Geekery, the two podcasts. And I got started riffing in Rocky Horror because that was the first movie you went to go see where you could scream things at the screens. Although I don't know if that's technically riffing, since there are set things you scream at the screen. But you're always able to throw other things out there if anyone can hear you. I found other avenues of riffing when I went to StarCon Denver long, long ago and sat in on a panel with the Mystery Science Theater 3000 guys, and this was when they were first getting started on Comedy Central. And unfortunately, in Colorado, this was way back in the early days of cable, and you had to choose between Comedy Central and Ha. And Colorado chose Ha, and you probably realize there's no Ha anymore. There is a Comedy Central. So I was actually one of the people at the end of the Mystery Science Theater 3000 where it says, please keep circulating the tapes. We would circulate the tapes because those people who couldn't get Comedy Central had no way of getting Mystery Science Theater 3000. And I just thought it was really fun. And I am an aficionado of really bad films. And this was a way to make them more enjoyable. And I have actually riffed live at cons, usually in the presence of Rich. It's just something I really enjoy. So, well, now that we've done that. So, do you find yourself, besides riffing movies, riffing your life?
Constantly. I mean, that's kind of what Facebook posts are these days. You know, it's like Facebook is just thinking of something that interesting that happened and trying to phrase it in a perfect way, and then looking at like the humor in it and just putting it out there. And then, of course, you know, there's the sarcasm trigger that, you know, that has the inner monologue going throughout your entire life, especially when you're trying to put on a polite face for people you can't stand or dealing with people who are struggling with concepts of reality. Yourself?
Being an MC in burlesque and before that as an announcer in indie pro wrestling, I'd have to deal with hecklers, which are people who are riffing live things that are going on.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of comedians have to deal with that as well. I have found actually the biggest riff that happens, and I think this is something that we all have an issue with, but we don't necessarily think of it that way. And once I started thinking of it this way, it actually helped me, was that we all have that inner voice that is a dick to us. Where you'll just be doing good, you'll have a good day, the sun is high, the birds are chirping, and then your brain basically reminds you of some shitty thing that you did a long time ago, or something bad that could happen. That is your brain being an angry riffer in your head. And once I started to realize that, because it was really affecting my mental attitude, once I realized that, I was like, no, my brain's just being an asshole. It's an asshole heckler. Okay, I get that. That's manageable, because then I would just try to think of something positive to counteract that, which you know, you can't necessarily do in riffing, because the thing that you're riffing is it's passive. It is what it is. Riffing tends to be a one-way street, but then there will be something where, you know, you're just walking around and you see something happen and it's just like, oh, that's unfortunate. Just little things like that sometimes. That can be a little riff-tacular. But for the most part, I really try to keep things positive. So then I try to make a positive joke of something, which is something that you don't really see a whole lot in riffing, because it is specifically making fun of something like that, which is also a really nice vein to tap occasionally.
Well, that's a good question. Like, what's the difference between riffing and heckling?
Is there a difference? But I think heckling... Hecklers say something to get a response.
It's designed to
hurt. Yeah, when you're riffing a movie, you're not expecting that movie to come back at you and say something.
Well,
but the audience. Whoever you're around, or if there is a live audience there, you're wanting a reaction out of that.
Yeah, and I think that's the difference, because with the movie, they don't have a reaction. It's just going on its paces. A movie can't feel hurt. And now the people who made the movie and watched it, they could get hurt by riffs.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Time chasers.
Yeah, time chasers, like the time chaser scenario. Which they've since come to term with. You know how many Castleton teas have been sold since then? You know?
So there is a slight difference between heckling and riffing. Do you find yourself cutting back on your riffing in areas where you're just in public? Because I know I love to riff in the privacy of my own home with friends. Even if I'm in a movie theater, even if the movie is just shit terrible, I don't do that in public.
No, I think if there's
a special place in hell for people like that.
If there's someone you love and trust who won't mind, who is next to you, you can say it in the smallest of whispers that won't harm anybody. You know, I think I did it in I can't believe I did it in Return of the King. We were in a Tolkien panel later. Yeah. I'm like, you know, I got the Tolkien tattoos. I love Tolkien. But there's that one moment where they're going through the paths of the dead and they're going, man, no one has ever come out. And I go, nonsense. They only say that because no one ever has.
Yeah, there is those moments where you can lean into the person you're with and you can whisper a little bit.
A spouse or best friend. But not everyone in the theater.
Yeah, I was in a theater and we were watching this horror movie. We're Still Here. And there was a moment where a ghost attacks somebody. He's driving away from the house. The guy's actually doing something smart in a horror film. He's driving away, and the ghost attacks him in the car. And I leaned over to the person I was with, and I was like, if that ghost doesn't know how to drive a stick, he's going to have a heck of a time getting back to And she started laughing, and I was like, oh, I probably shouldn't have said that, because now everyone's looking at her because she's laughing at this guy dying. So I try and save it for home.
Yeah.
Just to keep it nice.
Yeah.
So what are some of the movies that, because Mystery Science Theater 3000 is obviously the biggest proprietor of riffing. Did they come up with it?
I don't think they invented it. It was definitely something you were starting to see on a lot of the public access shows.
Yeah.
As, you know, these public access shows would have these libraries of either public domain or really cheap, or they bought like a package of all these really old movies, and let's just show the movies. And then, you know, you have your Elvira or Ben Gulli come in. And, you know, RiffTrax, I think, Mystery Science Theater might have been the first one to do it during the play instead of in between, like, the commercial breaks or something. Wasn't that the Elvira bit there?
Yeah, I definitely think that the horror host is what started the concept of it in a acceptable format. Because, again, otherwise, you know.
We don't know.
Lincoln may have been running his mouth during that play.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows?
Sorry, taking care of a heckler.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it was the horror host. But they would come in certain parts. And then I think it was... Goulardi was the first one who really started to kind of put himself in the scenes of the movies. Not all of them, but occasionally popping in there while they were while the movie was going on. So I think, you know, 50s, 60s era. And then I think MST3K was the first one that was constant.
Yeah.
That was part of the track of the movie, essentially.
Yeah. So.
So... we've all watched Mystery Science Theater 3000. What are some of the really bad movies that you think have actually been helped by the fact that they've been riffed?
Oh, well, we mentioned Time Chasers already, definitely.
Which is funny, because they sent their movie to Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah, they had a party.
To be riffed.
They had a party.
And got very upset that they were mean to it.
Although, as the years have passed, though, they've actually taken a much lighter tour. Yeah. When they did the Riff Tracks live again of Time Chasers, they had the full support of the cast now, who understood... It wasn't so close to home. Well, remember, this was a 90s show. Time Chasers was 92. So this is still fresh in their memories. This is still like, you know, it was still his favorite pet project after he had graduated and his parents had funded the movie.
Well, and the other thing is with riffing, it's not just about taking shots at the movie. It's seeing that there's the opportunity for a joke.
Yes.
I mean, one of the biggest ones from one of the earliest Misties was Eat at Joe's.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make fun of the movie. It's just there's a flashing light.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just put it in there. And I think that's kind of one of the things that maybe the creators don't realize, that it's not necessarily about a bad movie.
No.
Because we've done some bad movies that it was impossible to riff, because it was just like,
it can't be too bad.
If it's too bad or too boring, you can't do anything.
Like Monster of Go-Go was one of the biggest flops because there was no sound for half of the movie, because the sound didn't make it to the film on that one. So half of the time, they're riffing over scenes and
It's like ankle biters.
It's not funny because there's no content. You literally have no content. But when you break into that cheesy barrier, you can hear everybody, you can hear the lines, everything is getting more absurd with Beginning of the End or Touch of Satan or some of those other ones. And I think the best ones are the ones that take themselves too seriously.
Yeah, whenever you get a movie that thinks it's so much better than it actually is, that... it's almost primed for ripping.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And whereas something with like Plan 9 can be difficult because it's made with such earnestness. Like if somebody, you can tell that they have wrung their heart out in making it, and there's so much passion in the screen of filmmaking. Even if it's shit, even if it's complete garbage, if there's so much heart in it,
it's hard to be mean to it.
Yeah.
And then you get one like we did Cemetery Man. And it was just so weird. Nobody wanted to say anything because we wanted to make sure we could all hear the dialogue so we knew what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to like comedies and stuff like that, like we tried to do Spaceballs and everybody was quiet. Or the only time people spoke was when they were quoting the movie because we enjoyed it too much. So there's some things that are just, difficult to riff.
Mm-hmm.
Like finding that balance.
I think one of the best things were the shorts. with these little educational films on how, you know, maintaining clean hygiene or, you know, how to be a good white person in the 60s, you know.
How to cook cake for your band.
Choosing a band instrument, you know, it's just...
Okay, they were Mr. B Natural.
Stuff of nightmares. Well, yeah, and then the whole thing just turned out to be a giant ad for Conair Instruments. So.
Yeah.
That's like the one export of this town in Ohio or Indiana or something.
But you have actually, you have directors who are now known because their movies have been ripped. I mean, would anyone have known who Coleman Francis was if they had not done all
Francis Coleman. Yeah.
He had two first names.
Yes, I hate that. I do that too.
Was it Coleman Francis?
Oh my gosh! Okay, that's my bad.
Yeah, I was thinking it was Coleman Francis.
You know, I think they made a joke on that several times flipping it around.
This morning was Margaret Mead writing "Gone with the Wind."
Yes. So, yeah, would anyone know who Coleman Francis was if they had not ripped all three of his movies? And now they've been re-released on DVD. And
I still can't sit through Beast of Yucca Flats. Oh my God.
Come on, Torch.
Flag on the Moon. What does it mean?
Those movies were great because their soundtrack was not synced at all. Mm-hmm. He couldn't record sound when he recorded the film, so he recorded everything ADR in three different rooms with three different acoustics.
Yeah. I'm sad we didn't get some more Roger Corman films, honestly. We got pretty tame.
Roger Corman, I think, is difficult to riff because, again, you get that earnestness there. And the fact that he is just such a prolific director that you could make an entire career riffing Roger Corman.
But it was all of his early stuff, though, when he was serious. Later, when he was sort of letting his hair down and getting all psychedelic and funky, you know, that would have been way more fun to do Mask of the Red Death or The Raven. God, The Raven was fun.
Do you find yourself riffing really good movies? In your head. Not like...
Yeah, no.
Yeah, everybody kept looking at me weird when I was doing it to Schindler's List.
I do find myself occasionally the joke is there and it's like, yeah, that's a good one.
Even movies I like, I'm going, shut up, this line is good. I'll find myself riffing it when I'm with certain people. Mostly my brother David, who co-writes with me, because that's like how we started out writing, was just making smart-ass comments through everything. And yeah, we were watching like the trilogy of Lord of the Rings extended edition, shut up everyone, this part is good. And then just, we kept creeping in. Like every time we got a sweeping panorama of the scenery, we'd start going, visit New Zealand.
See, now, as a Flight of the Conchords fan, every time they did sweeping gestures, I just thought of Murray's posters in, I don't know if anyone watched Flight of the Conchords. Their manager, Murray, had these posters. It's like, New Zealand, it's down under. New Zealand, rocks. Whenever there was a rock, take your mom. So whenever there was these sweeping vests, like, New Zealand, take your mom.
And that was Rhys Darby.
Yes.
One of the other one I like is when you're watching an older movie and, you know, there's like some sort of impossible stunt, you're just sitting there going, it's CG. CG's so fake. I don't know why. It's all practical.
Yeah, we're watching cartoons, fake cartoons.
Yeah. Oh, that rock's made of styrofoam. He couldn't lift that.
Well, and that's some of the joy of riffing, because you can actually point out those things in a joke that almost justifies its existence, whatever that mistake is, whatever that limitation in the making of that movie and stuff, to where you're almost complimenting it. You're giving it a reason that's why they messed that up or something like that. So, you know, with what you had asked earlier, I think that, you know, this kind of stuff can really, really positively impact a movie. Because like Birdemic or The Room, nobody would give a crap about that if people hadn't been making fun of
them. Or should they?
Yeah.
But, and yeah, it's like, that's what we were talking earlier about, the difference between riffing and heckling. I mean, sometimes riffing can be a way to make something more fun and enjoyable without that vitriol, without that aiming to hurt somebody that heckling is.
Do you ever find that some of the riffs just get too mean?
And it's one of those, like, looking back at the 80s and 90s, you know, there was a lot of gay jokes and a lot of transphobic jokes and stuff like that. And unfortunately, I think, you know, that was a lot of the product of its time. And it doesn't justify it, but it does sort of show you this is where a lot of the comedy came from in the 80s and 90s, is going, oh, that's gay, or that's a man in a dress with duct tape, you know. It's unfortunate, and I think we all fall into those pitfalls when we try to stay current in comedy.
Well, and I think that that kind of stuff is actually important to go back and revisit because it shows growth. It shows, for instance, you know, I used to think, oh, that's gay. Mm-hmm. And until we got a bunch of angry letters, and this was a podcast I did 15 years ago. And we got a bunch of letters, and at first it was like, oh, come on, we're not really using it that way. Come on, we're not being mean. And I was like, oh, okay, hold on. After 10 letters. Let's see here. So I'm using it to describe something that is lame, so then I guess I'm saying that gay people... Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah. Well, and when you get questions like, this is offensive, and you always have to stop and say... Why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should have an explanation why, because that's how you grow. And I think it's important to, even though it's unfortunate that those times existed, that we can still go back and see and like acknowledge the growth and stuff like that. Hope that other people will grow in that way too. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of times where if, you know, somebody says something's retarded, I'm just like, pick a different word.
Yeah.
You know, your brain came up with that word. It can come up with a different one. And it's no offense. Like, look, you know, you may not have realized that what you're doing is punching down at somebody who is completely... They are unable to defend themselves. Mm-hmm. Try using the N-word around a black person.
Yeah.
They will defend themselves. So it's one, and it's something that a lot of people don't realize. And I think that bringing it back to riffing, that with a lot of the stuff that we've seen in older movies, even movies just 10 years ago, we can actually kind of provide a social commentary on that to point out, like, oh, that's maybe not the best thing in the world, but you can still, you know, like, oh, hey, that character is not woke or something, you know. So there are ways to showcase to people who may not realize, like, that whatever that content is or whatever is, there's a reason why we don't do it anymore.
Yeah, and now that I'm showing my kids Mystery Science Theater and Riff Tracks and stuff like that, it really is important for me to every now and then to stop the tape and go, you know, okay, this is why we don't make this joke now.
Yeah.
Because it has been on forever.
Yeah, 80,
89.
Yeah. So. Yeah, because kids are jackasses. Like, they know that certain words get reactions on the playground and stuff like that. So, you know, they'll use it just because they want to be edgy or whatever.
Yeah.
And so they just know it gets a reaction, so that's why they use it. You know, my son was doing stuff like that where he was calling people fag, and it's just like, okay, we're going to have a sit down here, pal. giving you a pass because you didn't know what it means. Here's what it means. Here's how it was used to put people down. Here's the reason why it's referred to as a bundle of sticks, and then why they homosexuals were referred to that, because they thought they should burn. And he was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. It's like, you didn't know, pal. Now you do.
Yeah.
So now next time you do it, then it's going to be some problems. But, and it is using some of those old classic things. Like Blazing Saddles is a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
Where that movie is... riffing on, and parodies basically riff on whatever content that they're either satirizing or parodying.
Yes.
And showcasing that all the racist characters were dumb ones makes the movie not racist, and you can actually see that some of the characters grow but still hold on to their foolish ways. And just that entire movie, I think probably Mel Brooks is one of the greatest riffers of all time.
Yeah, yeah.
With his major comedy movies all being commentary on other things.
Spaceballs.
Yeah. And we can actually see in that one, like the Spaceballs ones was a little on the mean side to a lot of the sci-fi stuff.
Yeah.
But then you get Galaxy Quest, which isn't a parody, it's a satire. And that is a much more positive spin on all
by
the stuff that's making fun
of. What a savings.
So do you think the influx of riffing or the popularity of riffing has turned us into a bunch of assholes when it comes to media?
I think we're just more allowed to be our asshole selves and out in public instead of hiding behind closed doors.
It just allows that out?
Well, you know, and I don't know. It's where did we go from Statler and Waldorf to this being an art form?
Yeah.
Those guys were jerks.
Yeah, they were. No, they were trying to hurt Fozzie. I was always on Fozzie's side.
Oh, hell yeah.
That one. But
he was just sitting in the corner.
Yeah.
Because I do try. I do feel that because I'm such a hardcore fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000, that I have been a little mean to movies that don't necessarily need.
That's a fair thing. And you know, it's riffing has become more accessible thanks to things like Twitch and you know, live YouTube and live Facebook, where people can do live commentary on things that are currently happening or people things that are currently being shown and stuff like that. That's internet has made all of that more accessible.
Yeah, I mean, Riff Tracks will allow you to riff a movie and and send it.
Yeah.
So I think that what you're saying is that the very first riffer was the first person who said, "I'd like to speak to your manager."
Yeah, there. Which was probably Eve in the Garden of Eden. This apple doesn't taste right. I'd like to speak to your manager.
I mean, it makes me see things in different ways and really opens my eyes, but...
But it's not very good.
And my landlord kicked me out. Yeah.
So does anyone have any questions? Let's just open it up to the audience because we suddenly have...
Or thoughts on riffing and stuff like that. I know we went all over the place.
Yeah, we haven't done process or anything.
No.
But, yeah.
I missed this, but what's your favorite movie to like watch the riff tracks for, the MSD?
My favorite Misty episode. I'm going to go with Pod People because it stinks. and I love bad sci-fi and bad horror, and this was kind of a combination of both. Plus, it had the added bonus of having credit sequences that had nothing to do with the movie. Because the copy that they got was like, I don't know if it was like, I don't know where they got it, but it actually had scenes from Galaxy Invader at the beginning.
Yeah,
which is a totally different movie and also a very good riff tracks. But yeah, I'm probably gonna go with Pod People.
That's a good one. Mine keeps switching back and forth depending on what mood I'm in. The one I've been watching a lot lately was The Screaming Skull.
And she just throws that chair.
Yeah, yeah. No, I love that one. First of all, the Gumby short at the beginning was fantastic. I loved the Gumby short at the beginning. It was a great episode. But The Screaming Skull was great for riffing because the pacing was so slow. There was a lot of dead air. So there was a lot of things that the trio could do to build up all the stories in the comedy. Like, there's the scene where there's knocking for 10 minutes and nothing's happening. It's just bump, 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 the whole thing. And it's just like, oh, John's playing on the seesaw again. Bump, bump. And suddenly it's different. Bump, bump. And you keep hearing the seesaw as he's going up and down and the board's hitting the concrete at the end there. And then and they just keep commenting on how long the movie is at the same time. And it was all the more funny because the beginning of the movie... was the movie itself had this prologue where they promised audience members that if they had died of fright, the studio would pay for their funeral. And as the movie goes, this is becoming more and more unlikely. And they keep talking about what they're going to do with their free coffin. So I'm going to call in and say that I died. I get a free coffin. So I think that one was great because... It was an interesting story. It was an interesting story about a husband gaslighting his wife and, you know, the mysterious circumstances around his former wife's... It had all the makings of a great movie, just one that was 15 minutes long, not 90 minutes. So I think that one right now is my favorite. I think I'm going to go back and watch that a few more times as we get on the road to Halloween right now. So
I think my favorite one is one that I watch every year. And it's a Christmas tradition for me.
Oh,
the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yay! Oh, so painful.
So painful. Like, I would just watch the holiday specials just by itself every year anyway, just to remind myself that the flanneled one is flawed. But when it comes to... once I discovered the Rift or the MST3K, I was just immediately like... this is the only way I will watch it again. Because everything that they're throwing in, because it's all the stuff that I was thinking in my head anyway. it just makes it tolerable. I look back and I don't know why I would watch it every year without the tracks. But once I got it, I'm just like, no, I don't know why I did, but this is how I'm going to do it every year. And now I force myself because it's like, remember, Star Wars can suck.
Well, I mean, you speak Wookiee, so did you understand the entire first 15 minutes?
Honestly, dude, that's the reason why I can do Wookiee sounds is from the holiday special, because the first 15 minutes are just...
It's all in Shriwook?
Yeah. Because for those of you who don't know, Matricula, she did a concert last night, and she has a song called Chewy Chewy. And so during certain parts of the song, I'm up there. So yeah, so I think really that's the reason why I can do it, because I've seen it so many times now.
So when you do riffs in a like a con capacity or actually for something, not just in your head in your home, do you watch the movie several times or do you just do it off the cuff?
Well, the first time that I did it at a con, there was some delightful irony because I was doing it with an improv group, and I was not a part of the improv group. They had watched it several times and had showed up with notes. So the improv group had notes. I rolled in having never seen it before. I would rather do that because my reaction is going to be, and especially if there are people who prepare, which is fantastic, they can do that because that's their thing. But for me, it works better if it's more natural. Like where I, because a lot of times, whatever we're watching, it's the first time for the audience as well. So I can kind of be that audience surrogate on the riffers because I'm seeing it for the first time. I'm reacting naturally and stuff. And sure, you know, afterward, think of a bunch of jokes that could have used, but I'm usually quite happy with what I'd come up with in the moment and stuff and that genuineness to it.
I haven't had much opportunity to do live riff. Most of my stuff is in writing the riffs, which involves watching the movie several times and then pausing at an interesting point and backing up to the time signature of where that area is. And then I have an Excel sheet where I have the cue line, the line that I'm inserting, and just roughly like where the time signature was. And so what we do is we have this big Excel sheet, and we make it a Google Doc so everyone can put in different things at different times. But it's important when you're scripting one is not to talk over lines that are funny. So it's really about selecting the good lines in the right place so you don't lose that experience that you're still watching a movie. It wouldn't be funny if people were just doing a constant stream of commentary and you don't actually get to watch the movie. That was the whole point, is to make comments on the movie.
And it also gives you the context for the jokes.
Exactly. And it's great, too, because you can do, if you script it out, you can do callbacks and running gags. Those are a lot of fun, too. One of my favorite things when I was riffing the G.I. Joe animated movie was trying to come up with as many silly G.I. Joe names as I could possibly come up with. So I had like Frosty Chops and Huggy Bear and Squeezy Doll and, you know, Squeegee Mop, Shampoo Bottle. You know, every single one of them, you know, soon available as an action figure.
Wait, you had the Huggy Bear action figure? I want that. Part of the Starsky and
Hutch. Yeah, I knew it was the Starsky and Hutch.
He had Pimp Hand Grip.
Action feathers.
So I think the riff you were talking about was Zardoz? Was that the one that...
Oh, no! With the mankini.
That was the one where PSL came in with, like...
No, every one of them. Every one of them that they did.
I threw him for a loop, because this was at Con Carolinas. I threw him for a loop 2 years later, because we voted on the movie at the time of the riff, and they couldn't prepare.
Yeah, well, that was also because they picked a shit show the year previous. With Japanese version of Star Wars or something like that, and it was
would have been good if we could hear anything in the movie, but there was just... You couldn't make out dialogue. And I'm like, this is impossible to riff because I have no context of anything. And that's
the Monster of Go-Go problem again.
Yeah. Whenever you get one of those really old movies or a something made in a foreign country that's not properly dubbed, it makes it incredibly difficult to do anything with it because you can't hear what's going on in the movie.
Yeah, you still need that context.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that there was one time where I think it was down to like two Star Trek episodes or something like that. Mm-hmm. And one of them was Spock's brain.
Yeah.
Which was...
You are not Morg. You are not on Morg.
That was brutal.
But yeah, we did Batman and Robin because we had...
Yeah, that's a good... That's got lots of fun in there.
Audience
That's right, because I...
Where did I find that?
Well, these were just live.
Unfortunately, these were live.
Yeah.
But with Batman and Robin, I actually just, instead of making jokes, I just started doing commentary as Arnold Schwarzenegger. We had some great... They had the sushi on the craft table that day. It was, yeah, fantastic.
Halfway through the film, I'm like, I don't know where Arnold stops and Rich begins anymore.
Because I had done that years before with Cineplex because we did Conan, and I was just like, I wonder if this will work. And it was funny because everybody else, because normally a lot of people were talking over each other with throwing riffs at the screen, and everybody kind of quieted down.
I had a muscle right there. A couple of weeks ago, I pulled it from lifting too much, and then I had to really work out. I did a lot of yoga, a lot of Ashtanga.
Yeah, that's what me and my brother did when we live drift a game in Lord of the Rings Online. Every time we saw one of the, you know, the writers of Rohan, he's like, "Oh, you doing my what?" And all the dwarves are, "Oh yeah, hey." You go up there and it's cold, eh? You got your warm up, yeah?
A few things. Thank you for not talking over the movie, because I have a couple of friends who could not stand to hear the movie talked over. It just ruined it.
Well, those are people that shouldn't be going to riffs then. That's the entire point.
Yeah.
Incognito cinema warriors never talk over the movie. They're the speed metal of riffing. Things get lots in.
Okay.
They bother to be careful. Have any of you had the live experience where I was at, I forget which con, late at night, first night, they put up an episode of Dragon Ball Z. And it started a little slowly, but the whole audience got in. It was like crossing Rocky Border with MST3K. It wasn't
dangerous.
That is very dangerous.
Yeah, that sounds like fun.
Got into it.
That does sound like fun.
And I actually cured a migraine with the Star Wars Holiday Special and Rift Tracks.
something left your brain and died.
There's a way I can let George Lucas know, because I think, you know, I've heard he wants to destroy every copy with a hammer, but it would feel better if he knows people are actually having a wonderful time with it now.
I think he's hiding in a cave right now from everybody.
Have you seen...
$1,000 bill.
It's a well-furnished cave.
Have you seen the original prequels? I don't think he cares whether people like
it. Yeah,
no. We have good prequels now, though. We've got Rogue One.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah, that was fun.
We have one good prequel. So we have any other questions? Any favorite Misty episodes? Anyone want to rip us? Don't.
I've seen soap that leaves a better film than this.
What are your favorite movies to rip on?
I love ripping on horror. Because it's easy to do. Horror falls into very many tropes and people have to do stupid things in horror films.
It relies on people doing stupid things.
It relies on people being incredibly dumb. Like Blair Witch.
Blair Witch is... Blair Witch is my problem with Blair Witch is I need drama meme. I need drama meme to Blair Witch.
Yeah, could you imagine Blair Witch would be 15 minutes long if it was done in the day of cell phones?
Yeah, I know. Like,
GPS.
No. There's still places in West Virginia you cannot get signal.
Fair enough.
And that's why you don't go to those places.
No, you don't.
They used a drone, but then they didn't use it at all.
I know.
You can't use drone in the trees. That's the thing.
Well, you can.
The minute you're in Jen's tree cover.
It got stuck.
Oh, yeah,
she had to climb up and get it, and that, of course, was, you know, her doom. But I'm like, it's gone. Just leave it.
Yeah,
just go.
So like, no, it's $300. I ain't leaving that. So,
you've seen the final sacrifice. That was good.
Oh, God.
Love that one.
Rousedower.
Or just one more sacrifice. That's the last one.
Rousedower. It was so sad because that actor recently passed away. We all lifted a beer and dumped it on the ground.
Beer on the sun. Toast the beer on the sun. Couple six-pack curls. Now I want a beer. Thanks.
We got about 5 more minutes. What do we want to talk about?
Well, you were talking about like the favorite genre. For you, it's horror.
By the way,
you can also hear Carol doing, I think it's about once a month now, the Scream Queen Survival Manual.
That's cool.
And where she basically takes a horror movie and then would she survive? And so it's a little bit of aftermarket riffing on the movie, but you're riffing on the concept the tropes.
Definitely.
Like
For me, it's fantasy. I mean, I'm starting to make my living making fun at poking out all the strange inaccuracies and inconsistencies in bad fantasy. these days. So there's just so much, and there's so much of you know, doing the same story with the same kinds of characters, that it is, it's fun because I have a good grounding on the tropes. And once you know the tropes, it's great to go from there with, you know, how the character, you know, it's also really easy to predict what's going to come next. So yeah, it gives you a more solid ground to riff on stuff, because it's like, oh, and the mentor is going to die in 3, 2, 1, gone. You know?
Do you have any favorite tropes?
My favorite trope is the whiny boy chosen one who doesn't, you know, who's just sits there, it's hard, same as the world.
I want to go to charging station and pick up some power.
That's one.
And then you watch the prequels and you realize that Luke got it from his dad.
Yeah.
I hate sand.
Yeah. Of course, it gets everywhere.
I killed them all, but not just the men, but the women and the children.
So that's my favorite genre. This is the cheesy fantasy. Space fantasy as well, too. Those are a lot of fun.
I don't really have a favorite genre. It just it depends on the movie itself, because it really comes down to how much passion was put into the making of it. Because then some people they're so blunt. Like Ed Wood is a perfect example, because there was so much passion in what he did. He was blind to the glaring issues that he had in filmmaking.
Yeah.
Or the budgetary concerns, because. One of the reasons why I had $3 in a ham sandwich and an Angora sweater, but that was about it.
They blew it on the cardboard thing for the airplane.
some of the old comedies, that there's places for it, or old 80s TV shows, there's a lot of places for it.
Yeah.
But I think it really is like, I mean, one of the reasons why, and this dovetails into it, it may seem like I'm going off on a tangent, but there are four major 80s TV shows that most people will think about when they're thinking about action, drama, live action, kind of stuff. So you've got Airwolf, A-Team, Knight Rider,
yep,
and I forgot what the other one was in my example. So there's three, right, that most people think about. And Dukes of Hazzard. Now, the reason why I pulled these ones, because Knight Rider and Airwolf do not hold up. Mm-hmm. A-Team, and aside from the Confederate flag on the General Lee, the name of the car, Dukes of Hazzard holds up because those two knew they were doing a live-action cartoon. Airwolf, Knight Rider, not so much. They were very serious in what they were doing. That's why those are a little rough to watch.
Yeah, Quantum Leap, too. It's like you'd think it'd be easier. So.
Yeah, but you go to... But you go to watch, you know, any episode of the A-Team, you can see that they're having fun and that they get it. So something like that can be fun to riff. The other ones may be easier to riff, but it's also like, I kind of feel like I'm punching down a little bit.
I'm
really going to make somebody feel bad if they ever find this. You know?
Yeah.
But with, you know, the A-Team, it figures like, yeah, that's what we were doing.
Yeah.
Their response isn't like, oh, man, it's like, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think cartoons, when you talk about 80s, cartoons are really great for that, too. Like, especially with the lip-sync pacing issues they had with a lot of the imports, like in He-Man and She-Ra and stuff like that. Those are a lot of fun to do as well, because there's so many opportunities and so many gaps you could fill.
Yeah, and those are easy because those are so genuine. It's not that they didn't think that they were doing something bigger than what they were doing, that they knew that they were doing commercials for toys, but they are so genuine. So it's really easy to be like, really, nobody could tell the difference between He-Man and
She-Ra?
Prince Adam.
Oh, Prince Adam.
And She-Ra? No, I think there were some differences between He-Man and She-Ra.
Oh, you meant the secret identity. I thought you meant like the difference between like He-Man and Goltar and his golden lance. Soltar and his golden lance.
My pets are better than hers.
But my hair is still silky and
she's constantly stealing my shampoo.
We all know the hero of that show is Skeletor.
I am the hero! And a weenie!
So any last thoughts before we vacate the premises?
No? With that, go and may the smart ass be with you.
Yes.
Thank you guys so much for coming out. Please feel free to riff, but riff responsibly.
Yes.
Riff with love in your hearts.
Yeah, don't be mean.
Thank yous and high fives go out to the wonderful panelists and audience members, plus a big special thanks to RavenCon 13.5. Go to RavenCon.com and get ready to plan 2019. We will be there. Will you? The answer should be yes. Look for more panels from RavenCon at GeekRadioDaily.com.